Thursday, February 21st, 2008. Welcome, members. Welcome all who are here. Please remember to turn off your cell phones and your BlackBerries and PDAs so that we do not have disruption of the force. We are going to... Members, Rick, can you have an announcement to make?
Yes, thank you, Chair Buckley. I introduced my honorary page this morning on the floor, but he's here in the committee. Jordan White is a high school student. He's a blind student from Dayton High School, and he has been learning all kinds of stuff today, and he's able to be here for about another 15 minutes and listen to this important issue.
Welcome, Jordan. Good to have you with us. Thank you, Vice Chair. I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 1092A, and we agreed, members, we held this over, that we're going to allow for a little bit more testimony. Last night, Timothy Travis, I believe it is. Good afternoon. Welcome to the House Education Committee.
Thank you. My name is Timothy Travis. I am staff counsel for the Oregon Judicial Department. The juvenile courts, both dependency, child abuse and neglect, and delinquency, are a part of my responsibility, as well as the treatment courts, the drug courts and mental health courts. I've been with the Judicial Department for 10 years now. And I thought I was going to finally get through a session without having to testify. Thank you ever so much.
You're welcome, sir.
I wanted to make clear at the start that the Judicial Department itself, as a legislative branch of government, takes no stand on policy issues that are before you. Individual judges indeed may do that, but as the legislative branch of government, it is not our function to make or influence law. That's your job to set policy. Our job is to apply it. So I'm not going to be talking about the good, bad, or indifferent of many of the aspects of this bill today. I am going to talk about the area that is legitimate for us to talk about as the Judicial Department, and that is the area of court operations, procedure, and fiscal considerations. The Oregon Judicial Department was not involved in this bill until yesterday with the drafting of the Dash 7 amendments, but I have attended or listened to every hearing on this bill since it began on the Senate side, just call it a premonition or whatever, but somehow I knew that something to do with delinquent kids was going to involve us. I need my Quaker integrity requires me to divulge to you that I have very strong personal feelings on this issue. I formerly was a senior attorney at the Juvenile Rights Project before I came to this position in state government 10 years ago. And so you can imagine that I do have some interest in this. However, I'm also a former high school teacher and counselor, former member of the Oregon Education Association, and I was the president of an OEA local for a year when I was a teacher. So you just need to know that I'm very involved in this, and I have sentiments on both sides of this issue. What I came to talk to you today about is the Dash 7 amendments, which call for judges to make findings about whether or not the pre-adjudication notification that is the subject of Senate Bill 1092 should happen. And the language of the bill says that the court, you have to excuse me, I have a very bad cold. I heard you yesterday from my sick bed. And again, thanks a lot for bringing this up.
You're welcome.
Whether or not the judge should have discretion to make a finding whether this notification should go forward. And the finding is couched in the best interest of the child. And this is, the Dash 7. Thank you so much. This is the Dash 7 amendment. And I have spoken with some judges. I have sent an email poll out to many. I know that some of you have had contact with some of the judges. And frankly, this provision is troublesome to the judges, but it's also troublesome to us because this is really a vague standard. We're not sure what it is exactly that you want us to find. And I'm not an experienced juvenile court judge. I have sat as a pro tem judge in juvenile court several times, and I have to say that if I look at the Dash 7 amendments, it isn't clear to me what you want me to do. What am I trying to decide? And the problem is that the discretion that's given by this bill to the judge is unbridled. And discretion, judicial discretion, doesn't properly mean that a judge is free to decide whatever he or she thinks is right in a particular case. Judicial discretion functions within the framework of a legislative policy. In other words, the judge has a policy in front of him or her and has been given freedom to fashion a remedy that will get us to that enunciated policy which you define. Now, usually this policy is stated in so many words in the legislation, or it is defined by the process that y'all put onto this and say this is the process that you'll follow, or it's defined by the evidence that you define as being within the court's handling of this. And usually the court will consider the following things, including but not limited to the following things. Mm-hmm. There is none of that in this legislation. All it says is it in the best interest of the child? And that, after I don't want to tell you how many years involved in the legal profession dealing with children, the phrase best interest of the child is like a sail on a boat. You can just fill it with wind and go in any direction that you want. And the judges, many of the judges, are very concerned about this. Now, there are some judges who are just fine with it, okay? But nonetheless, there's a lot of concern about what this means. So that's essentially what I wanted to say. I do want to talk a little bit about the fiscal.
Could I ask a question about that?
Certainly.
About the substance? Actually, I think, I hate to contradict you, but I don't think the statute needs, I don't think the statute would say the judge needs to find it is in the best interest of the child. I think the statute, the amendment says that the notice will be given unless the judge finds it is not in the best interest of the child.
That's, thank you.
Which isn't precisely the same.
No, it is not precisely the same thing. Thank you.
And I'm not sure how big a sale that is. I think it would be, since the presumption is that the notice would be given, how big of a sale does it make to give a judge discretion not to send forward a notice?
It's not which side the presumption is on. It's what you mean by best interest of the child. That's the vague part. It is unclear what you mean by best interest of the child. Now, I've heard all these...
May I follow?
Yes, please. Yes.
Well, it's my understanding, and I'm not a lawyer nor a judge, that one of the prime functions of the juvenile system is to determine what's in the best interest of the child in the case in front of them.
That's really not true in delinquency law. The best interest standard was removed from 419C. Delinquency law in the mid-90s was Senate Bill 1, which was a complete revamping of the delinquency laws. That is the standard in 419B, which is child abuse and neglect. The standard in 419C now is public safety, accountability of the offender, including paying restitution, and reformation. Best interest of the child was a phrase that was in the statutes. It was a long-time goal of crime victims to remove that from the statute, and they celebrated big time when every reference to best interest of the child was banished from the statutes like so many snakes driven into the sea.
It's not in B anymore?
It's in B, but it's not in C.
What does it mean when it's in B?
Well, you know, I don't know. It's one of those phrases that people don't... Usually in B, what it comes down to is the health and safety of the child is the paramount concern. And that's been sort of the yardstick. That comes from the Adoption and Safe Families Act, the recent, well, not so recent anymore, federal legislation that changed the focus of child abuse and neglect. So that's usually, in addition to permanency for the child, those are usually the things that people talk about in terms of the best interest of the child.
Representative Crummell? Did you have questions?
No,
sorry. You guys are pointing down the line. It's very good. Crummell.
All the way down.
Keep going, Mr. Chair. That buck has been passed.
It rolls downhill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if my question was answered or not. I guess as a layman, I would say we're dealing with semantics, but I know that's not true in the judicial system. I would think that judges make decisions in DHS cases every day regarding juveniles as to what's in their best interest. Now, defining best interest, okay, maybe I don't have, I could list a laundry list of things.
Sure.
So maybe that's, I guess that's what your point is. Am I correct? Defining best interests?
The domestic relations law, ORS 107, when it talks about best interest, it has a list of things that the judge has to consider, including but not limited to. And we're talking about an entirely different situation when you talk about delinquents and dependents. Because as I heard all of the testimony that you have heard on this bill, it seems to me that what this is asking the court to do, maybe, is balance the risk to the youth of being compromised in his or her education with the interest in public safety in the school. And if that's what you're really trying to do, you're trying to balance the best interest of the child with public safety, I think you're taking a massive step backwards in terms of what Senate Bill 1 did to the delinquency code in the mid-90s. And Governor Kulongoski led, or he wasn't governor then, he was attorney general, led a task force to rewrite the delinquency laws to change them so that they were not the same as delinquency laws any longer. The two split. And this has been a national trend, by the way. We weren't doing anything radical. Now it seems to me that by putting best interest back in there, you're really trying to put them back together. And I don't know that Crime Victims United or other groups who were interested in removing the best interest of the youth from the statutes, I don't know that they're aware of this or that they weighed in on it or what. But, you know, I want to put on the record that the court is not advocating that. And I'd appreciate it if Steve Dahl asks you if we did. I'd appreciate it if you'd tell him, no, we did not advocate
that. As a matter of policy, are you non-advocating it?
Representative Greenleck, I am not here advocating any policy.
Either direction.
In any direction.
So we'll tell Crime Victims United that you neither supported this or...
No.
Oppose this.
No, the piece that has to do with the judicial discretion, we are opposed to that, not on the issue of bringing best interest back, because I'm just trying to explain the complexity. We are opposed to this because this is going to cause additional hearings, it's going to cause lengthier hearings, and the judge is going to have to make a written finding on the record of what he or she is finding, which means that the judge has to have evidence. Judges don't make findings just out of thin air. They have to have evidence. And we have no idea what evidence goes into this finding. Is it evidence that the school will kick the kid out? Is that what the evidence is? The judges simply don't know what it is that you want them to consider in making this decision. And it's the vagueness, and it's the possible fiscal, which I didn't get to when Representative Greenleck asked me a question.
Would you please comment on the fiscal?
The fiscal is very difficult in this time frame to estimate. But we have just some sort of scratch down notes here. The first is that if the Dash 7 amendments are not attached to the bill, there's no fiscal as far as we're concerned. So it's the Dash 7 amendments that causes the fiscal.
Mm-hmm.
With the A7s, the court is going to have to hold additional evidentiary hearings. And because the court has to make this determination. The court is going to have to hear evidence about what is the best interest of the child. You can count on defense lawyers, used to be one, you can count on defense lawyers wanting this finding made in every single delinquency case. Very few will the lawyer let this go by, because as a lawyer representing these kids, I know the problems that they have at school, staying in school and all this stuff like this. So lawyers are going to want this finding made in every single case. We figure that it's going to be an hour and a half to 2 hours of judge time and staff time. And, you know, the bottom line is that it would take about 265 of these cases in a year to reach the $50,000 threshold. 265 cases. This does not include indigent defense costs, because these people will be represented by lawyers in this hearing. So indigent defense costs, I don't know what those are, and I don't know pardon me, I don't know what the cost to the district attorney's offices are going to be, because they're going to be also in the middle of this. So our fiscal is sort of like indeterminate, who knows, but it could be quite substantial. And we really would like to reserve the right to come back and ask you all for money if the karma turns bad on this.
Thank you. Ms. Tress, I'm going to have Representative Clem ask a question. He was asking if you could...
Yeah, let me just see if I can walk through a scenario here. So a youth is charged with a crime, and that procedure is separate, whether, you know, when their court date is, all that sort of thing. But the charging then triggers this notice. And they're going to have to decide whether to get the attorney, maybe that they were going to use for the criminal charge. Also, they have to decide whether it's worth it to pay that person to go defend them on whether their school's going to get a notice or not. And I would guess some will choose, no, it's not worth paying the lawyer more just over the notice issue. I'd rather have them focus on the crime. So then we get to, okay, yes, I want to go to court over the notice. And what you're saying is we're going to ask the judge to sort of case by case look at the relative stigma that might happen in that school. The student's going to present, you know, some arguments that, you know, if you tell my school this, it's likely to get dropped later because I think it's just a DA plea bargaining. And if you tell them this, it could ruin my reputation with my teachers forever. Please don't. And then you're saying, what's the judge supposed to do with that?
Let me back up, Representative Clem. I believe that the report is triggered by the first appearance in the case. I think that
correct.
I think that Section 2 says when the youth makes a first appearance before the juvenile court, and it's 15 days after that first appearance that is the deadline to make that notification. So, and the other thing to keep in mind is that the vast majority of these kids have a government lawyer. Have a government provided lawyer. They're not making a decision about spending money, nor are their parents making a decision about spending money. They're doing this on your dime and mine. So they're not going to have scruples about whether or not they want to fight this. So they
decide, because they've got free lawyer, yeah, let's contest not only the charge or plea bargain that, but let's contest getting a notice over as well.
That's correct.
And then when that hearing takes place, they want to talk about the seemingly adverse effect of having that notice go to their superintendent. They might abuse it. They might tell somebody something inappropriate. And you're saying the judge has no real basis for trying to decide whether there is a stigma that's a matter of, you know, it's a given within these situations, for example.
I think that the judge would have to have some sort of evidence about those questions. I mean, what's the rate at which kids who this notification is provided are taken out of the educational program they're in now and put in some other educational program? But the issue that I'm mostly focusing on from many judges is they're saying that in order to make this finding, I have to do a criminal law style preliminary hearing to test the strength of the state's case. And that is the 1.5 to 2.5 hour hearing in which essentially there is a mini trial on the record at the beginning of the case, and you have to have the evidence and such. It's unheard of in a delinquency case to have that kind of preliminary hearing. Now, let me be clear. There are other judges who say, I'm not going to have this full-blown hearing. I'm just going to make a decision based on whatever I'm going to make a decision on. Understand that judges are independently elected political officials. We have no ability to dictate to them, aside from what's in statute, what they're going to do. And what this does is this gives all of these judges the ability to, or perhaps the necessity, to do whatever they think is best in this circumstance.
Thank you, Mr. Chester. Representative Greenock.
Yeah, I'm pretty naive about this stuff, so maybe you could help me from your impaired state to help understand the process. A juvenile was charged, and at that point, one of two things happened. He's either kept in custody or he's released.
That's correct.
If he's kept in custody, it's not an issue here, right?
The notification is
the
not
notification
an issue?
Is not an issue.
I'm not sure that's true by the language here. It doesn't say if a kid's in custody, no notice will be given.
Why would you give notice to school about the danger of a kid if they're in custody?
Because the statute doesn't provide an exception for when the kid is in custody.
Well, we may need to amend the statute to do that, too. That's
but keep in mind, Representative Greenwood, that they don't stay in custody necessarily.
Well, but at that point, they stay in custody. They'll be in custody until there's another hearing. But
there may be another hearing, yes.
Assume. But now, let's say they're not. Let's take that argument aside for a moment. And let's say they're not. In many of the cases, most of the cases, I would say, or in many of the cases, the notification is there anyway, but it's not covered by the statute. There are prior statutes that cover notification. Is that right?
Notification of a pre-adjudication
yes.
Allegation? No.
Measure 11 cases aren't? I am naive, so you have to explain a lot to me here.
Representative Greenleaf, but when you go to the world of juvenile court, it's like Alice in Wonderland, and the language is important. When you say pre-adjudication, you're talking about a juvenile case in delinquency, but when you talk about... But that's not the nomenclature for a criminal case. Oh, you're absolutely right. In Measure 11 or in
these,
a waiver...
These aren't criminal cases we're talking about?
No.
The carrying of a bomb is not a criminal case in this case?
Not if it's charged in juvenile court, no. If it's charged in juvenile court, it is an act which, if committed by an adult, would be a felony and misdemeanor, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. The language is very important. It's not a crime.
So kids can either be turned over to the adult court or kept in the juvenile
court. That's
correct. So we're talking here about ones that are kept in the juvenile court.
That's correct.
Do you have some sense of how many of each of these happen in a year you administer that process?
I have no idea how many cases that would fall within the ambit of what you've listed, either the list that's in the bill now or the list that you're talking about squeezing it down to. I have no idea how many cases that is total. Because we don't have any way of sorting the cases by allegations made on the petition. We can sort them after adjudication in terms of what the kid has been found to have done, but we don't have the capability to sort them by what the allegation is up top.
And how will you produce a fiscal then, or will the fiscal become indeterminate if you don't know those?
I think that's what I was trying to say in my own way, is that we just don't know what it is, but it could be substantial.
But your answer would be it'll be an indeterminate fiscal.
Yes.
I can live with an indeterminate fiscal.
Thank you, Representative.
Well, I hasten to add that we'd like to come back and ask for more money if it goes wild.
Representative, that's what the e-board's for. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tim, thanks for coming off your sick bed to come and visit with us. I was a proponent of Dash 7, because I can see how the judges in my district have worked with juvenile cases and would feel, in most cases, quite free to make that determination because they will spend the time. I can see how maybe in a Washington County or Multnomah County, they're running them through a lot more quickly. You really had me when you started talking about attorneys getting involved for the youths, setting up a whole separate hearing to explain why this is. So you had me there. So I'm off of it now.
I should clarify, Representative Huffman. In some of these cases, if it's asked that the youth be detained, then that determination that we're talking about in the Dash 7 amendments will happen within the context of the hearing about whether or not the youth is going to be detained. But in other cases in which that's not an issue, and that's the vast majority of cases, even the cases where you're talking about assault 2 and such, the vast majority of these cases, don't forget, assault 2 can be poking somebody with a plastic spork, okay? And it also can be a very serious assault on somebody. So not all of these cases have that preliminary that detention hearing, which is when you'd have the separate hearing. I don't want anybody to believe that you're going to have a separate hearing in every single case, because that's not the case.
But it could be.
Well, it could be a lot.
Yeah, it could be.
Did you have a follow-up, Representative Hoffman?
Do I need one?
I don't know. Did you have a follow-up?
No, thank you, Vice Chair.
Okay, thank you. Representative Roblin.
No, thanks. I was just helping get the attention because Mr. Huffman was overlooked before.
Thank you very much. Mr. Trevis, anything else you'd like to add to your comments?
Not a thing. Thank you.
Okay, I really appreciate you coming down, and I appreciate the fact that you can see the kind of balancing act that's trying to be done. And you know, since you have background in both, we're just going to give you the bill and have you.
as a personal thing, and not a position of the Judicial Department, I really like the idea of the Law Commission looking at this after it's passed. It's a good process that I've taken part in, and it's a place where everybody comes to the table. So that amendment, I don't know which it is, if I were a private citizen sitting here, which I'm not, I would say that that's a good amendment to add to the bill.
Can I ask a question about that?
Yes, agreement.
What about the possibility of having a Law Commission look at it before it's passed?
That's up to you.
You wouldn't object to that?
I don't have it. I'm not going to express a view about that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Committee's closed today.
They do. Is there anyone else who wanted to testify on the floor has not had a chance to speak on it? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing.
Can I ask you a question, sir?
Yes.
Did you have a chance to contact any of the judges, and did you get any opinions from
them? I did speak to, did played phone tag and traded messages, and then had the judge contact our committee administrator and speak through the amendments. And that particular judge, if I can paraphrase the conversation, didn't love it, didn't hate it. I'm going to close the public hearing, open up a work session so we can continue our discussion on Senate Bill 1092. Members, in my working with our colleagues on the other side, I've tried to keep them very clear on where we are with this bill and how we're going to move it forward. I have told them we would not add a fiscal of any kind to this bill, so I would seek motions for two amendments that we have in front of us, the A8 and the A10s. We are going to have to do some work on the A10 and the fact that it was just brought to my attention prior to the hearing that the bill as currently constructed would go into effect on January 1st, 2009, which makes the timeline in the A10s unworkable. Our community administrator has sought ledge counsel to see if we can change the bill to have an emergency clause put in so that the bill would go into effect. So in a sense, what we'd be looking at is with the A8s, making sure that we are taking Representative Remick's suggestion in terms of the list of crimes that trigger this reporting, making sure it's clear that we're intending these to be serious crimes, which is the intent behind the A8-8 resolution amendment. And then on the A10 is to work with the Law Commission. And we will be the suggestion, if I can continue just to kind of describe where we are, the suggestion on the A10s would be to delete the words on line 3 that says and impacts, which would allow the Law Commission to get to work right away on saying the policies that we've been discussing so far this afternoon.
I'm sorry, would you say that again?
Representative, on line 3 of the A10 amendments, mm-hmm. We would be deleting, and I'm not making a motion to do that as yet, just to be clear, or asking for a motion of that. We would be deleting the words and impacts. So the Oregon Law Commission would be saying the policies, and again, given the testimony that we've had today, would be helping us through this kind of how the process could possibly work with judicial discretion, etc. So at this point, I would accept a motion on the A8s if one would be made.
Mr. Chairman, before we do that?
Vice Chair Wisdom would like to have a comment before we move on the amendment.
Thank you. What are we doing with 5, 6, and 7?
We currently, Representative, we are not, I'm not asking for a motion on those amendments.
Unless you move.
Amendments were they tempting?
Those, I believe, the 5, 6, and 7 were delivered to us by the juvenile, right?
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Representative Shield, he authorized that, or he supported
okay,
that. Those
amendments.
Mr. Chair, we also have 4, 5, 6, and 7. 4, 5, 6, 7, all we got. 4 and 5.
6.
4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Online. Yeah, 10 also.
Number nine.
So you're only asking the committee to vote on 8 and 10?
And I would be glad for if the committee would like to have a few moments to take a look at this and see what that would actually mean. I'd be glad to allow that to happen.
Mr. Chair, also for the committee's information, I'm going to move 7 when the time is right. So they might want to look at that as well.
Thank you, Representative Greenock. Representative Clem. So I think it's part of both 7 and 8, but this is actually just a question about page 2, line 18, where we're talking about inserting, or excuse me, 19. Well, 18 and 19. Anyway, so here's my question. We're talking about the crime involving harm or threatened harm to another person, and then including criminal homicide, assault, or any attempt to cause, and we may add serious physical injury to another person.
Correct.
Because it includes those things, it's also just anything else that is harm or threatened harm, right? And when it says the words including these things, it's not exclusive that it's got to be only those things. It's just saying make sure those things are included, but it could just be what's determined to be harm or threatened harm. Really? I'm going to beat you up.
Let me say, Clem, that is correct, and it's I think the intent of the amendment by adding felony and adding the word serious is to state a level that the intent of the legislation has, is to make sure that these are serious crimes. But you are correct, and we'd have led counsel come up and give you an opinion on that if you'd like.
Well, I guess the thing I want to mention is because of where serious is being inserted, and felony for that matter, it's only, again, to the things that are included, but it still leaves harm or threatened harm without any modifier of any kind like serious. You know, the serious doesn't apply to harm. The serious applies to whatever the other word is, physical injury.
Right.
So serious physical injury. But you know, I mean, that's what I guess I'm trying to get at is how is it going to be looked at if there's a bully who's saying, I'm going to beat you up? That's clearly not one of the crimes that's listed,
right.
But it is a trigger, and it is threatened harm, and the serious isn't in that section of the sentence. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah,
that
was my problem.
Do we have alleged counsel?
No.
She's drafting?
Yes.
I think she's not drafting. So, Mr. Greenlick, if I recall when we discussed this amendment, that was your intent, was to make sure that we're not roping people in who have threatened, I'm going to punch you in the nose, or crimes that are not of a serious.
I'm not sure we've achieved that, though. That is my worry, exactly this worry.
If I might, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure how many times a DA is going to go charge someone for that,
mm-hmm.
but what I'm trying to figure out is that trigger of a court appearance or charging, is this section exclusive of that, or does this have to be in the context of also having made a court appearance?
There has to be a court appearance.
Yes.
So the threat of I'm going to punch you in the nose has to result in the police being called,
right.
A lot of other things. And then, okay, that's critical. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
I was, you know, the only thing I know that our rep is not here, but we have a commission here, and since they have people who will be looking at it later, if we pass 8, maybe they get an item.
We don't make them start their work yet. Thank you, Representative Roland.
Yeah, we can discuss it when we get to the amendment. You know?
All right.
Motion for the
A8. I think we do need, yes, I would like the motion for the A8.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I would like to move to adopt the dash A8 to the amendments.
Vice Chair Comp has moved the dash A8 amendments to Senate Bill 1092. Discussion.
Yeah, I have a discussion. Maybe we could have our judicial gentleman. I wonder what serious means. Is there a code definition?
Chess, would you rejoin us? Good to have you around, sir.
Quaker integrity.
Again, Timothy Travis, Oregon Judicial Department. Somewhere in here, and I can't put my finger on it right now, there is a definition of serious physical injury. Yes, there's a statutory definition.
But that's not a vague term.
Good.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Greenlick. Any further discussion on the motion? Hearing no further discussion, is there any opposition to the motion? Hearing no opposition, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, are you ready?
Vice Chair Trump, I'm going to ask our commission administrator here for her counsel on with the dash 10 should be. I think we might need to wait just a little bit to see if we're going to get back from that counsel. We're going to get something interesting.
Mr. Chair, if you wanted to make a conceptual amendment to the A-10s and remove two words, I think that would be permissible.
Which two?
Thank you.
I would let the maker of the motion define it, but the idea would be and impacts on line three.
This isn't the time question we're talking about.
No, it's not time question. Absolutely. Thank you very much. If you can guide us through, Dana, does Vice Chair Kopp need to make the specific motion before we adopt the A-10 amendments so we can make it conceptual? Thank you.
That's the first step. Yes. Mr. Chair, I would like to make a motion to do a conceptual, what's the word?
Conceptual
amendment. Conceptual amendment to Senate Bill 1092, A10, and that would be to delete the words in line 3 and impacts.
Vice Chair Kopp has moved to make a conceptual amendment. We're hoping the clerk isn't listening. Line 3 on the dash 10 amendments, the words and impacts.
This is an amendment to the amendment?
This is an amendment to the amendment, sir.
Why wouldn't you move the dash 10s without those two words?
If we delete the two words, accept a motion to delete those two words, and then accept a motion to accept it.
We don't have the motion in front of us.
Well, then maybe we need to call the clerk.
No, I think you need to have the motion in front.
The motion was to remove the words.
The motion is to remove words in an amendment that we don't have on the table.
I think we talked about
it. It seemed to me you need to put the amendment on the table.
I think we talked about this on the House floor today, whether you have the ballot.
Vice Chair.
Wait till you hear my comment on the minority report.
I actually withdraw my my motion on the conceptual amendment.
Thank you.
So, but Mr. Chair, I would like to make a motion to adopt the Senate Bill 1092-10 amendments.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Dash 810 amendments to Senate Bill 1092. Is there discussion? Anyone except for Vice Chair Wisman? Hearing none. Is there objection?
Well, I think she now needs to amend the amendment.
Oh, and now she needs to amend the amendment with the motion on the table.
Unless somebody else wishes to.
I would be delighted. And the motion on the table to delete the two words and impact from the A-10 amendment.
Representative Greenick has made a motion to amend the amendment by removing the words and impacts from line 3 of the dash 810s. Is there discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Crowell.
Representative, I'm going to have to take you out behind the barn.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Is this the motion?
This isn't a dating service.
In the A-10 amendments, I just want to clarify something. It calls for on line 7 that the commission is going to report to the appropriate interim committees, which that one boggles me. But anyway, no later than October 1 of 2008. But the effective date of this bill is not going to be until later than that.
Correct. We are asking Legislative Council to draft emergency clause for the bill so that, in effect, we could adopt emergency clause for the bill that would allow it to go into effect with the Law Commission begin their work.
When will Legislative Council have that up?
We're all looking at the door.
When the door opens, it's either going to be Legislative Council or this Chief Clerk,
right?
Or both of them will say, you guys are really not doing that.
Any further discussion on the motion by Representative Greenlick? Is there any opposition to the motion by Representative Greenlick? Hearing none, so ordered. We still are under a motion to adopt the dash A-10 made by Vice Chair Kopp. Is there discussion on the adoption of the A-10 amendments of Senate Bill 1092?
Only unless we say as amended by Representative Greenlight.
Is there any a motion or a discussion on the motion to adopt the dash A-10 amendments as amended by Representative Greenlight to Senate Bill 1092? Vice Chair Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have agreement from the petitioners or the people that initiated this? Who brought us the A-10s, and where are we?
Thank you very much, for that question. The A-10 was brought by the juvenile rights advocates and agreed to by the proponents of the bill, agreed to by the sponsors of the bill in the Senate. So
thank you very much.
Thank you, Vice Chair Wisner. Any further discussion? Is there any opposition to the motion? Hearing none, so ordered. Thank you, members. Representative Greenland.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move the A7 amendments. Senate Bill 1092.
Representative Greenick moves the A7 amendments to Senate Bill 1092. Discussion. Representative Greenick.
Yes, I continue to think that bringing judicial opinion into this is critical. And I think the way it's written now, which was accepted by both parties as well, at least by the disputed parties in the discussion we had, was that the presumption is that the schools will be notified of this charge unless a judge finds that it's not in the best interest of the student not to happen. Now, I don't know why best interest came out. I wasn't here in 1995, and I think none of us on the table were here in 1995. But it is the historical role of the juvenile courts to balance the interest of safety with the interest of the best interest of the child. I think that's an important function of the juvenile courts. It seems to me this is a important protection, and I'm not impressed that it will be as complex as the testimony you heard. And we also heard that it will be an indeterminate fiscal, so it won't cause it in that sense to go back to ways and means. And I think the process is greatly improved. Now, it may turn out we turn this over to the law commission. Their answer will be this is a burdensome and difficult thing to do. The bill will have been in place a relatively short time before we were back in 2009, and if the law commission, acting on this not in haste but in deliberation, finds it's a problem, then we'll have a report from them. I think it improves the bill. I think it makes the opponents of the bill feel easier to have this in it, and I would urge us to pass the dash 7 amendments.
Further discussion. Representative Kremble, then Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had actually written myself a note to approve the A7 amendments, and that would be a basis that I would support the bill. However, after the testimony from Mr. Stafford, who has much more experience in this arena than I do, and is a lawyer, and has worked with the Juvenile Rights Project, you know, when he and also in listening to my judges in Clackamas County as well as in Washington County, when they say, please don't send us any laws that don't have things very, very well laid out and very specified. And when they say, when you send us vague language, you're not helping. So when I take all of that into consideration, and with the comments that Mr. Stafford made, I can't support the A7s. And so I was there in reading them. I thought it, and I would agree with Representative Greenlick that it would, you know, before that testimony, I thought it would improve the bill. But when Mr. Stafford was talking, I was hearing the judges in Clackamas and Washington County's voices in my head, and I can't support it.
Thank you, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Chair. Basically, what Representative Kremel said, but I was sitting here as Representative Greenlick was requesting that we review these again, and I was wondering what it would do to the meaning if in line 5 we changed shall to may to give the judges, it would be up to their discretion. They could say, yes, I'll hear it, no, I won't, end of discussion. What would that do to it? Do you follow me there if we, in line 5, change shall to may?
Mr. Huffman, you have a talent for bringing things in.
What I'm here for, sir.
You guys were wondering who's going to replace me.
It also says may order. It is consistent with what it says in line 7.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Travis, would you rejoin us, please? Mr. Travis, Representative Huffman is, if you followed his statement, is suggesting that if the phrase was at the first hearing on a petition described in subsection 5 of this section, the court may determine whether notice under subsection, etc. Do you have an opinion?
My view is that it's still going to happen because people are going to be making motions to have this decision made. But I don't really have a mature view about what the difference between shall and may would be in this particular circumstance. A judge who's got a motion to do this and just says, I'm not going to hear this, I don't know what basis the court would make that decision on before they would hear the evidence. I mean, I suppose a judge could say, never in my courtroom will I hear one of these. And with may, I think they'd be there. I mean, that would be covered by the may. So,
Mr. Travis, would there still be, in your estimation, should a judge decide that he would like to determine whether this was workable or not for the youth, would there still be a fiscal cost that would require additional court time?
If we get to 265 cases of this, whether it's a shall or a may, that's $50,000 worth of fiscal. And don't forget, we haven't factored in the cost to the defense bar in that fiscal. So I really can't, with any integrity, tell you that it will or won't make a difference. I just don't know.
Thank you. I appreciate you very much. You could stay there because we don't have to keep walking back and forth. Representative Clem?
On this point, under this amendment, currently the way it's structured, the court would make this sort of finding determination every single case, because it just says at the first hearing, you know, period, they'll make it. Now, what this would do, besides what you just described, is the court could, you know, a particular judge could just consistently say, "I'm never going to hear these. I'm not going to do it." That's one scenario. Another scenario is the McMinnville scenario, where the judge says, everybody in the country knows about this already. There's no point in having a hearing about this. Everybody knows. And we've had many, as Representative Robler remembers, in Coos Bay, where a kid got charged with something and everybody knew about it because they bombed the high school. They stabbed someone in the parking lot. I mean, we had a lot of them for some reason when I was there. Not saying, maybe a correlation, maybe.
Before I was principal, when I was trying to get the thing ready to go, we got there. I was dean then.
So, again, I don't want them to have
a
hearing.
We never charged formally, though. Is that right? You want to put that on the record?
Actually. Juvenile records, thank you. So
this is public information.
In this scenario, a may would allow things where you don't have to, you know, take the extra time to do a hearing, where it's absolutely pointless because everybody knows anyway too. So I don't know. I kind of like it.
Yeah, I like it too.
For the discussion, Representative Huffman again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The only reason I was thinking of May is there are judicial differences. Wasco County may have a little more time for Judge Kelly to sit there and question the juvenile ad nauseum about what did you have for lunch yesterday, or, you know, where in Washington County maybe they don't have that time. And that's why I inserted the May. Would it give discretion to a rural judge that had the time and wanted to decide? That was my only thought.
Thank you, Representative Rubin.
I guess my biggest problem with May is that if we're going to do these things and we think it's good for one place and all of a sudden the judge in this says no and this other judge says I have more time so I can, it really does make a weird playing field over time. And so I have a harder time with this may. I understand the other may. I mean, if everyone had to be looked at by the judge to make a decision, I'd have a little more comfort than if I would the other way. But having heard the original discussion about how much it would cost, and I would venture to guess there are more than 265 of these cases a year in this state, and so that's harder for me. I mean, I am still feeling that in this particular case, I would not be for this amendment, even with the May.
Thank you, Representative Rubin.
Representative Crowell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We would still be leaving the language in that's on line 8 at the end of the line. It says, before issuing an order under this subsection, the court shall make specific findings on the record that the notice required by subsection 1A of this section is not in the best interest of the youth. And I think that that's one of the points that Mr. Travis was making.
Correct.
When he was talking about not giving the court any direction. So consequently, we're still telling them to find findings or to come up with some findings, but we're not telling them what to base the findings on. So
if
how does the court then determine what to base the findings on?
Only if an order is to be issued. If the judge decides not to issue the order, then the findings aren't required.
That's correct.
And in most cases, it's going to be pro forma that it will be. This puts all the presumption on the fact that there's going to be notification, leaving some room for a judge to say, no, in this case, it's not the right.
Representative Burley, you want to join us?
Welcome.
I may take
one to, but yes. That's right.
Representative, I could take a question from Representative Lim before we officially welcome you to the committee. Representative Lim.
Yes, to me, this A7. May or shall is not the issue as far as I'm concerned. The basic issue is the definition of best interest of the youth.
This is just wide open.
Without giving the definition, what's the best interest of the youth, we are just opening up wide. And this is dragged on by the lawyers, the interpretation. And so to me, you know, as it is, I cannot support the A7.
Thank you, Representative Lim. Representative Burley, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and sorry to interrupt, but this is obviously of great importance and interest to many of us for a number of reasons, but I was sitting in the back of the room listening to this deliberation about the A7 amendments, and I would submit, Mr. Chair and members, that since the committee has already adopted the A10 amendments, which calls for a study, then this whole discussion about A7 is rather academic at this point, and I would just suggest that you just show through the legislative record that you want to include the concepts or the thoughts in the A7 when you charge the commission here to do the study.
Representative, this is the Education Committee. Academic is us. I do appreciate those comments. I do. I don't mean to be disrespectful.
No, that's fine.
I do appreciate those comments. I agree with those comments.
I'm going to go to the back of the class again.
Can I go?
Yes, you can go.
Thank you.
Members, I would like to just add some comments, if I may, as well. Representative Burley does bring up the same points I had concern of. If we do put the emergency clause, which we're considering to do, this bill will go into effect upon passage, to give the court system time to adjust. I believe having the Law Commission actually study what we're doing makes a good deal of sense. I did, the sponsors of the bill, I have told I would not go anywhere near a fiscal on this bill. I know the indeterminate fiscal is not a problem for Representative Greenlick, but it is, with all due respect, it is a problem for me as well. So I will not be able to support the 87 amendment. Again, Representative Huffman.
Mr. Chair, thank you, sir. In light of your comments, I withdraw my May.
And June and July.
Can you do that?
Thank you, Representative. Vice Chair Kopp.
Just a question of clarification then, Mr. Chair. So if we do not, if the motion, if Representative Greenlick, did you already make a motion about day 7?
Yes, he did.
So depending upon whether this motion, if it would fail, then I'm just clarification that then we would not be dealing with this in the meantime, that judges wouldn't have to make any sort of statement in the interim in between the study.
Correct, Mr. Trump. This would allow the time for the Law Commission to study, offer recommendations, and to get more input from the court system as well.
Mr. Chair, if I could just make a closing Representative amendment. We do need to remember the sense of this bill. This bill is talking about kids from 9 years old up. And the way the bill is written is this automatically, this knowledge automatically goes to the schools And as we found out, it's important for a janitor to understand that a kid has been charged. We had testimony to that effect, that we want the janitor to know so the janitor won't be a hazard from a 9-year-old attacking them. I mean, I think the notion of this automatically goes on any kid charged with any of these things, not found guilty of it, but charged of any of these things, so that information can be made available to the janitor and the bus driver and the teacher's aide is a serious matter. I think safety in the classroom and the school is vitally important, and I'm very much concerned with it, but I'm also concerned with the fact that we're dealing with a serious matter when we put this stuff into the schools without anybody, without there being any way to stop that in any individual cases. And it seems to me it's a huge problem. And I mean, I think without this, it makes it very difficult for me to support the bill.
Thank you, Representative.
Which I would like to be supporting.
I appreciate your comments very much. I would comment that there is a discretionary aspect to it in terms of the superintendent of the district deciding on which school personnel would need to be informed of the charges against the youth involved. I share your great concern. I greatly appreciate your work on trying to find a way to make this judicial discretion piece work. Currently, I don't believe we have a way to make that work. I look forward to trying to make that work with the information that we're given in the future. And so, again, I would urge rejection of the A7 amendments. Vice Chair Collins.
Just for the record, Chair, this bill has been one of the most challenging that I've dealt with in a long time as a previous teacher, school administrator. My job as a school principal was to ensure the safety of all students and staff at all times. I just want to say that, for the record, I would really love to support the A7s, but at this, we have reached an agreement. There's been a tremendous amount of discussion and debate on this bill, and I just hope that it does come. After the review, I'm supportive of the review and think that's critical in this process to monitor what are the impacts to our children.
Thank you, Vice Chair Cobb. I'm going to ask the clerk.
What impacts?
Yeah, please call the roll.
Eliminated impact.
Yeah.
This is the A7.
There's a motion on the A7.
Yes.
Yes.
Is the A7?
Just the A7. No. I'm not supporting the A7s.
Senator Grover?
No.
Vice Chair Collins?
No.
No. The motion fails. Vice Chair Wisdom is excused from the vote. Did you have the vote done correctly?
No, sorry, I didn't.
That's okay. If I can, it was Huffman, no. Roblin, no. Crummel, no. Comp, no.
Thank you.
Buckley, no. Greenlick, yes. Lynn, no. Clem, no.
Thank
yes.
You.
Yes. 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 I'm sorry. Yes. Thank you.
I would like to point out to members of the committee that under other circumstances, this might have triggered a minority report on the floor.
Thank you for that observation, Representative. Members, before us, Ledge Council has quite remarkably produced the Dash A11 amendments. And I'd like to take just a minute for you to look it over from my initial reading of this. I wonder, are we going to need to
undo the 10s?
Undo the 10s.
We don't have to.
We don't have to. Ledge Council says we don't have to.
Okay.
When things we're come out and they overlap, Mr. Chair, they just make sure it all
okay.
Very good.
Comes
they'll
together.
Make it all work. Oh, so what we have with the A11 is the change of the...
Time out.
I'm going to stand in recess for a moment.
Is time out a Mason's? It's a kindergarten.
Community Administration, Legislative Council, we can indeed adopt the A11 if that's the committee's desire, which will supersede the A10. We don't have to do anything with the Dash 10 amendments. There is, if Legislative Council would like to come up and join us, there is a note or two she might want to comment on concerning the Dash A11. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your assistance today.
Thank you, Chair Buckley, members of the committee. What you have before you in the A11 is essentially the
ACNA.
Oh, sorry, this is Janelle. I'm Janelle Barton from Legislative Council's office. I feel like saying may it please the court.
Well, you can say that. It won't be.
I'm the court jester.
Chair Buckley, members of the committee, what you have before you right now is the A11s. And what the A11s do is they take out that and impacts language that you had requested to come out of the A10s. The A11s also include an emergency clause to allow immediate, upon passage, application of the directive to the Law Commission to study the policies of providing the notice. The problem with the E clause, that, well, I suppose some people would say it's a problem, some people might not, is that it has to apply to the whole bill.
Good.
If you wish to have the rest of the bill, other than the Law Commission study portion, apply as originally intended, which was to go into application on January 1st, we can do another conceptual amendment, and I can do a delayed operative date to allow the rest of the bill to go into effect on January 1st of 2009. Sorry.
Members, thank you so much for that clarification. Again, thank you for your work. Stick around. Representative Crumble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question that brings up, what does the A11s do to Section 15? And I brought this up the other day, and I know Dana was going to be asking about that. So if you can help us, and I'm not sure what Section 15 does anyway, so.
It's one of those, Chair Buckley, members of the committee, Representative Crummell. Section 15 is an operative date for Sections 12 and 14. Sections 12 and 14 amend ORS 338.025 and 338.015. If you look at Section 11 and Section 13, they also amend the same statutes. What we have here is a double amendment. What happened is last session or the session before, somebody decided to amend those two statutes and put a delayed operative date of 2014 on them. In order to make these amendments and make them continue after 2014, we had to amend them twice and then put the delayed operative date on the sections that are amending the delayed amendments.
Is there a Crumble? Could you repeat that back to us, please?
Perfect sense.
Nobody's got it.
Are we going to have to take a test?
That makes perfect sense.
I'm sitting for the LSAT on Saturday.
Do you have a follow-up, Representative, or are you going to accept that as a...
I think it makes sense, but I'm not sure. I just wanted to make sure because it has to do with the charter school law.
Representative Rodel, would you like to take a shot at it?
Well, what I'm excited about is that if the Law Commission comes back with recommendations for us to amend this in 09, we will get three of these. It won't just be two.
Wow.
Because we'll have to amend this one, and then possibly we could amend another one if we put a later date in.
That is true.
So the newest one might have others. But from my perspective, that makes total sense, because the other two ones that she mentions are exactly the same. That had eluded me before. They're really restatements of the other bill. It's just the dates that were different.
Chair Buckley, Representative Roblin.
That's perfect.
Thank you.
Well, I thought I was confused before.
It's Representative
you read the bill, it's
Members, please.
I'm sorry. Chair Buckley, Representative Roblin, members of the committee. What actually those two statutes do is they add this notice provision to the laws that the charter schools have to follow.
Right.
And so the amendments were adding other things in that.
And then
we don't really care about
that. And then those would have dropped out, and we have to remind them that this is still there again.
Is there any further questions of Ledge Council on the dash 11 of the 11 amendments? Do we have a motion on the Representative Rubin?
The question I have is, though, that if we want the bill itself to continue with the date of implementation, we're still going to have to do another conceptual amendment. Is that what I understood? If we want the actual implementation of this to stay where it is and to let the commission go, even if we do the 11s.
Correct.
We will still have to do another conceptual amendment to change that. Is that correct?
Chair Buckley, Representative Roblin, that is correct.
Okay.
So, in effect, if I can rephrase that, if we adapt the 11 as it exists right now, the reporting requirement would begin with the passage of the bill. Do I have that correct? Is
that correct? That should be no problem for the judicial division to start tomorrow.
Chair Buckley
is very flexible to me from a quaker integrity.
Chair Buckley, that is correct. It would be the law commission report would be into effect immediately. The rest of the bill would be waiting until January 1st.
If we just do these?
If you just do these, everything goes into effect immediately upon passage. If you do the conceptual amendment.
So, Kavinia, I want to get feedback from you. I know the proponents of the bill would obviously be absolutely fine with the reporting requirements going into effect as soon as possible. I don't want to get some quick, because we are running out of time.
I think the conceptual amendment would be useful. I don't see how it can actually start in the passage of the bill.
Are there reflections from anyone?
I'm okay either way.
Roblin's okay either way. God bless him. Is it? No? Okay. No, it doesn't really matter. Mr. Chair. Ms. Krauss, would you come up? Do you have an opinion on this here?
Mr. Chair. The bill currently is going to take effect at what? January 1 of 2009?
Yep.
Let's just move that.
Okay, then that would require...
Everybody was fine with the bill when we walked into here.
Okay, that would require the conceptual amendment.
Yes.
Okay. Representative Greenick, that would... Okay.
Give us
no problems over here. Any feelings either way, strong feelings. Help us through. Are you going to be able to do that so we can vote on it?
Do you want it right now?
Yes.
I can scribble something for you. I can't get it through publication services before you have to adjourn.
Okay. So this would generally, our members, I'm going to request that we pass this A11 as is. We still have to go, we can take it to conference committee if we needed to get this done.
Fine. Right. I agree. I think just as it is fine.
Are you saying we can pass a conceptual amendment without it being written down?
How about leaving it exactly as it is now and pass a conceptual amendment that makes the one section effective on emergency?
So the conceptual amendment would be...
all we need is section 6. We already passed 10.
Okay.
Well,
Representative Greenlee, do you want to make a motion to that effect?
I would like to make a conceptual... offer a conceptual amendment that makes what section is...
President, I believe we have to move... first make a motion on the dash
11. There you go. You got to make...
No, I'm saying you don't.
Okay.
I'm saying we've already adopted the dash 10. So I think we only need a conceptual amendment to the existing bill that puts in effect the section that the whatever it is. What section is that? Section
16.
Section 16. Conceptual amendment to make section 16 effective immediately.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask a question about this?
Yes.
Now that I think about it, for some reason, coming into today, you were having an emergency clause placed in this.
So the law commission could begin.
Is that the only reason, and the stakeholders were all okay that it was only on the law commission?
Correct.
Yeah. That's not what I'm saying, people.
Yeah, I'm sure they would. Would you like to come up, please, and give us some comments?
Well, that was the way it's been all along, and they've been behind it all along.
Oh, my God. Well, I don't know. Come on up, everybody.
May I come up?
We got 10 minutes. We can do this.
We can do a group hug. Everybody in the room gets together.
Sure, Mr. Chair, committee members, for your record, Lori Wimmer Whalen from Oregon Education Association. Our understanding was that the entire bill would get an emergency clause because it seems logical to me that if they're going to study how this is working as well as the policies, it makes sense to have it be in place so that it can work.
But they're not saying how it would be. We've deleted that impact.
The impacts, but they still would be able to see how the procedure is working. It wouldn't be hypothetical. They would be able to see this in operation. So it seems reasonable to us that if you're going to put an emergency clause on it, that you would put it on the entire bill, in which case you would not need your conceptual amendment.
Thank you.
Yeah. Could I ask you a question?
Hold on a second. Let's get all three comments. First, Representative.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Christian. I'm representing the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, and also because Mark McKechnie could not be here, I believe I am representing the Juvenile Rights Project as well. And our understanding when we walked into this hearing is the reason that an emergency clause was needed was technically because the commission needs the emergency clause in order to do the study. I've served on the juvenile subcommittee of the Oregon Law Commission, and they certainly can study the policy issues that have been discussed again and again on the Senate and the House side well before the bill goes into effect. So our position would be that we would support the conceptual amendment and have the bill as it was when we walked into this hearing, the bill except for the commission study provision, be effective January 1 of next year.
Chair Buckley, members of the committee, Wendy Johnson, Deputy Director and General Counsel for the Oregon Law Commission. You've deleted the end effects provision of the Dash 10, so you're not asking the Law Commission to look at how this bill would be working. So you're asking us to look at the general policy issues, and so that is something for us that we could start right away upon passage of the bill. As far as the emergency clause goes, this work group is already meeting, and in fact is scheduled to be meeting in March. So for us, an emergency clause is more of a technical thing for agencies and such. We're a private public institution that works on law reform, so I don't see that the emergency clause is a big issue for what we do.
It would require for the reports to come back and to be consistent with the timeline. Representative Greenman.
Yeah, I was just wondering, in response to the OEA testimony, why all the way through the Senate, getting voted in the Senate, all the way through our testimony here, we never heard anything about the need for an emergency clause, and what's changed since the original testimony that makes the need for an emergency clause relevant at this point.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlee, the fact that we are now putting in this study, that's what's changed. That was never part of the conversation until it came over to this side.
So that's the only thing you care about then?
Right, we just feel that it would be helpful to see the process working. That's all. I mean, I don't fall on my sword over it. I just think that it makes some intuitive sense to have all the information you possibly can have.
Further questions? Committee member? Thank you very much for
your
opinion. Appreciate it. We have the motion for a conceptual amendment. Are we still
right there? Well, I mean, it sounds like we don't need to change it. If the Law Commission's testimony is that they'll go to work on it now, I wouldn't bother to put it in.
We don't. If we do not...
It's supposed to be after the day of the bill.
No, the study won't be after the day of the bill currently.
But Mr. Chair, you had dueling testimony there, because you had one from on the juvenile rights project, and was saying that they do want the conceptual amendment with the start date of January 2nd, 2009 on the main part of the bill, but on the Law Commission part it would go in effect immediately. And you had Ms. Whalen from the OEA saying that they didn't want the that they wanted the whole bill to take effect.
And we have the Law Commission saying they don't need either of them.
And the Law Commission saying they don't
need either of them. I would
like to ask counsel.
Please,
they think there's the best way.
What the, go ahead. You can respond to that question, frame that
with
way.
With regard to whether we need to do, if we do nothing more than what we've done.
Oops.
I guess that's it.
Let me see if I understand the question, because we have a lot of stuff flying in the air. Chair Buckley, Representative Roblin, what you're asking me is whether you could proceed on what you've adopted the Dash 10s already,
mm-hmm.
whether it would be all right to proceed on that without the emergency clause and taking out that and impacts. As long as the Law Commission says that they're going to look at it anyway.
So the date that's listed in the Dash 10s would just become meaningless, the date of October 1st, 2008.
We could put in an operative date for the rest of it. We could do the e-clause, the operative date, but they're not, they're required to report to the legislature, but just not necessarily on this subject, but that date would become meaningless. So my recommendation would be to go ahead and put in the e-clause and the operative date to keep the January 2nd effective date of the rest of the bill, and to make sure that the dates of the reporting dates of the commission remain effective. But I can run back to my office and not put it through Pub Services.
No, we don't have time. Members, we have to move the bill. We will be having to concur with the Senate, so there's possibility of a conference committee. At this point, it doesn't really seem to matter which way we go, because we're going to have to continue this conversation. It's going to be an interesting, dicey position that we're in. So,
I withdraw my amendment.
Thank you, Representative Greenlee. The amendment was for the conceptual amendment. All right. So the A11s are on the table.
No. Can we move the A11s?
No one's moved the A11s.
Please move the A11s.
Okay. Is there a motion on the A11s, or do people want to select? There's no motion on the A11s. All right. Then we have the bill as adapted with the dash 8s and the dash 10s. I would take a motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move that we, move as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And that is Senate Bill 1092A.
Vice Chair Kopp moves Senate Bill 1092A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a brief discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair.
I saw Representative Crummell first, and I'll get to Representative Crummell.
Mr. Chair, I've looked this thing over, as we all have, several days now, and considered a lot of different things about it. I was prepared to come in and support the A5 amendments and the A7s. The A7s, of course, was answered by Mr. Travis. The A5s, you did not sound interested in taking a motion on those. And that is how I would have supported the bill. The way it is now, I think notification in schools is extremely important. However, in sections 2, 3, and 4, I think that we have gone way overboard on this. And sections 2 and 3, not including 4. And I think that those sections could have been deleted and made this probably a much better bill. So I'm not going to support the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Greenlee.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm going to provide a courtesy no, reserving my right to vote yes on the floor, and even my right to vote yes here if I change my mind in the next 2 minutes.
I can't tell you how much fun you are. Declan?
Just briefly, because I don't want to speak about this on the floor. So, I'm going to vote for the bill. I had some problems with struggling between the concept of charging, versus being found guilty. The thing that stuck with me was something that my mom said to me about 4 years ago when she was retiring from Marshfield from being a teacher. And she happens to be staying with me right now, so I actually went home and asked her again. And she said the same thing. First she said, I don't know if I would, just because they're charged, I'm not sure. And then she said, but I remember retiring in part because I am now afraid of my own students. And she said that to me 4 years ago, and I remembered it when we were thinking and talking about this bill. I've been thinking about that this whole time. And so then I had to think, well, what's the damage to the student if the superintendent knows? And the current state of where teachers are at, including, like I said, my own mother retired partially because of the violence that is happening that wasn't there 20 years ago. And so, that's where I'm at on this. I supported the A7s because I do think it might have been nice to have somebody other than the superintendent being the person who could have a look, but it's got a fiscal to it, it sounds like, probably in reality. So I'll look forward to the Law Commission report, but, in the end, I'm worried about the state of the profession and people feeling safe. I feel like, for the most part, what Representative Roblin talked about, which is most administrators and teachers, if a student is really just charged, they're going to be mostly thinking about the stress on the student, not necessarily even their own safety, but caring about the student and what they're going through right now, knowing that they're now having to get a lawyer, they're now maybe out on bail, they're going through a lot. And I you just got to trust them to not stigmatize the student, not do the wrong thing with the information to some extent.
Thank you, Representative Clem. Members, we are out of time, so I am going to ask for a roll call.
Yes. No. Yes.
No.
Aye.
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 Aye. The motion carries. I'll carry the bill on the floor, and I'm sure Representative Greenlee will assist. Members, just very, very briefly, because we are at the end of our work, thank you for your work, your consideration. I've thoroughly enjoyed the process of working with you this month in February. Thank you very much for your work. And thank you to our administrator and her assistant.
Thank you.
And we are adjourned.